You're with Annie on Solidarity Breakfast, and we've got Catherine Kelly on the line. G'day, Catherine. How are you?
Good morning, Annie. Annie, I'm well, thank you. And you?
I'm good. It's a very fine day outside, and the moon was full and shining down when I got here. So, you know, that's always a nice start to the day. Alliance Against Political Persecution. You have been a solid advocate for whistleblowers, and I just wanted to first start with Julian Assange. And the first time we've had a Prime Minister in Australia actually stand up for him.
Yes, he responded, Albanese responded to a question by Monique Ryan in the Parliament and took the opportunity to again sort of say how we've got to bring an end to this, it need not go on any longer. Which is very interesting. And apparently the British High Commissioner was in the visitors gallery at the time, along with the UK Minister for the Indo-Pacific, Anne-Marie Trevelyan. So I'm not sure whether that was sort of staged or just a happy coincidence. But I would think, I mean, people, parliamentarians just can't ask questions whenever they want to, so there has to be some permission given to ask your question. So I think maybe that was that's a signal that Albanese is giving them a more clearer message that he'd like this episode with Assange to be finalised and be finished. And I hope so.
Yeah.
There's an interesting further point with the UK extradition treaty. Now, the Article 4 states, and I quote, extradition shall not be granted if the offence for which extradition is requested is a political offence. And we know this is a political offence, or not an offence. I mean, he hasn't committed any offence, but a political prosecution or request for extradition. Jennifer Robinson outlined that very clearly in her National Press Club address. And also Nils Melver, the former UN Rapporteur for Torture, Special Rapporteur on Torture, has outlined very clearly in his book that this is political. So I hope that that will be, that if that's pointed out to the UK government, and they should know that already, that they have a reason to stop this prosecution.
Yeah, that we might see a reversal of this outrageous attack on Julian Assange.
Yes, it is criminal. I mean, he has suffered for so long, 12 years now since he was first arrested, I believe, and 3 years in virtually solitary confinement in Belmarsh prison. Now, why do you do that to somebody if they just sort of skip bail and they've already passed the sentence that he might have had for skipping bail? He's already done that sort of many times over, I think. It's certainly political. There's no question about that. So he should be released, and those charges, and the US may even like the UK to stop the extradition request, and then they can sort of reconsider what they do from there. But if he was the extradition was stopped and he could stay in the UK, it might be safer for him there than coming here.
It's a bit like the fox in the hen house, really, or the fox deciding to adjudicate on its own behaviour. And that moves us on to the issues that are surrounding Richard Boyle and David McBride. Both of these men have actually shone a light on quite terrible behaviours in parts of our established system, one the ATO, the tax office, and the other the armed forces. Neither men were radicals in the sense that they are outside of the system. They are actually proponents of the system. They just expect the system to actually work, right?
Yes, well, Richard Boyle was straightforward. I mean, he thought that the practices of the ATO were way too serious and harsh, garnishing people's bank accounts, sometimes without their knowledge, I understand. And he went through all the right processes of making complaints, and they didn't do anything until, you know, he spoke out publicly, and then he was sacked, and then they changed the practices. So it's clear that this is an unjust prosecution of him. He is a heroic whistleblower. And but an interesting thing was that they also tried to use suppression orders in his case, which fortunately the judge knocked back. And he's done his PID, public interest disclosure defence, which was apparently very strong. And I think the sort of prosecution wound themselves up in knots. They admitted that he hadn't disclosed things because he'd given them to a lawyer about people's personal information. He'd given it to the lawyer not to be opened into unless asked to, and he wasn't. And so they admitted that he hadn't disclosed things, but then he's being charged or prosecuted for disclosure. So it's a bit weird, but we're waiting for the judge's decision on that, his public interest disclosure defence, and hopefully it might be out before Christmas. But it looks like that there'll be an appeal whichever way it goes. If she dismisses the charges, the prosecution, you know, the Commonwealth Department Director of Public Prosecutions will possibly appeal, I understand. But who knows? We've written to Dreyfus a number of times on the, you know, all these cases, but he's sort of standing firm on not dropping their cases for McBride and Boyle, which is hard to understand, really.
Well, McBride was also vindicated in the Brereton report. So, yeah, both of these people have been vindicated. I went to an event where Bernard Collaery was talking, and he was saying that, and the person who was talking to him was also a legal man. They were talking about the Richard Boyle case in particular, in relation to the same notion that the charges should be dropped, but that the AT, they were talking about the difficulty in relation to the Australian Tax Office's autonomy from government interference. Isn't that interesting? That's why it becomes more difficult for the Attorney General. It's a different difficulty than the one that was presented by Bernard Collaery.
Yes, but he still does have the power, the same power that he used to drop the charges for Collaery. He could use that power to drop the charges for McBride and Boyle. It's quite clear that he has that power. So,
but anyway, that was what they were saying, that it's a more of a sticky plot.
Yes, I'm not
from a legal sure. From a legal point of view. I you know what they're like. They're a world unto themselves. It's almost like you have to have the chairs in order, or it won't work as a room.
Right. Interesting for the last McBride hearing, because the chairs were certainly in order. This was McBride's public interest event. About a third of the room was roped off for the public, and then there were two thirds which were roped off, I think, for lawyers or journalists or whatever. They had hardly, you know, one or two people sitting in there. But we were all squashed up together in this and there's this completely virtually completely empty area nearby that you know, we couldn't sit in, and it was just ridiculous. But there's interesting things with McBride's trial too. I mean, national security is such a problem here, as it was with Bernard Collaery and Witness K. They can just say national security and close the court. And in his public interest disclosure defence, the prosecution said that there were concerns, foreign partners' concerns, that they would have to seek to remove evidence.
Oh, goodness.
From the court. And this is outrageous. So we can only presume that this foreign partner's concerns is the US's concerns. Now, we really need to unpack this idea of national security and see what it is. Is this just that, you know, we're going to criticise the war in general? Or I can't see that there's many... are we talking about the Army's tactics, the Australian Army's tactics, or... What? There's not that many things that...
We've just done full circle. It's probably a Julian Assange, collateral damage, all those types of things that are related to what armies do, which they don't want anybody to know.
That's right. I mean, they very much are related. These are both people who've... courageously disclosed war crimes, or possible war crimes, obvious war crimes in the case of Julian Assange. And we're not allowed to talk about it, apparently. So I think we should be really concerned about this. And it goes further. I was reading Clinton Fernandez's book. Have you heard of that one? It's called Sub-Imperial Power.
Yes.
And he talks about the Joint Committee on Security and Intelligence, the Joint Parliamentary Committee. Now, people talk about this as a powerful committee overseeing the intelligence agencies. But actually, it has very little power to oversee the intelligence agencies. It can only look at their finance and administration. It's not allowed to review the intelligence gathering or assessment priorities, or review particular operations that have been done or are going to be done by the intelligence agencies, or the sources of information and other operation assistance methods available to the agencies. So basically, they are not overseeing what the intelligence agencies are doing either. So, you know, who is?
Basically, the whistleblowers.
Yeah, basically, the whistleblowers, the agencies themselves, and it seems like the US.
We're outsourcing it, you reckon?
Yes. Well, this is, Clinton has very good knowledge on these matters. He's been with the Australian Defence Force Academy for some years and been very closely involved in these matters. So I think he knows what he's talking about. But the US Congress has much greater powers to oversee their intelligence agencies, and they have much less secrecy than we do here.
Mm.
But it's just because, I mean, there's a whole, you know, book, probably books have been written, but why we're so subservient to the US, and this is obviously very dangerous in many areas, particularly now with our relations to China. But it's interesting how it's feeding into virtually, you know, a lot of sectors in our society. I went to the Independent Peaceful Australia Network conference recently, and we were given a presentation about the French company Thales, I think.
Right, yes.
And how that was information about their contract was kept from the public. And it was just information that contract hadn't been value for money.
But see, I told you, they don't want anybody to know about their incompetence. Yeah. Anyway, by the by, we'll have to leave it there. Obviously, the court cases related to and the struggle to stop the court cases going ahead for Richard Boyle and David McBride continue.
Can I just mention a couple of other charge law cases that the AAPP has decided are political prosecution? I don't know whether you've heard of the Australian pilot Daniel Duggan.
No, tell us.
He's being, the US have requested extradition for him too. He lives somewhere near Orange. He's, I think, a retired pilot from the US Marines. He was American, but he's been living in Australia for some time. He has spent time in China. But the US wants to extradite him, but he doesn't know the charges, and nobody else does at this stage.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's a Christmas present, isn't it?
Yes. If you get my email, there's a link there to the Guardian article about him. Yes, we're going to be asking Dreyfus about that one too. And there's also the case of the climate activist Violet Coco.
Yeah, of course.
Sydney, sentenced to 15 months, refused bail. She's going to court back in on the 15th or 16th December. Hopefully she will get bail. I mean, these laws are outrageous, so consider that is a political case as well.
Yeah, definitely it is. They'll have to create a new wing.
Yes, when they want to put all the climate activists in jail. Yeah, so they're extremely serious as well, I think.
I think you're right. Thank you very much for talking to us this morning, Catherine.
Thank you.